Blog Talk Radio.
Drinking the same Ford.
Hypothetical, political, lyrical, miracle whip. Just like butter, my rhymes are legit. Cause I'm a Humpty, not Humpty Dumpty, but Humpty Hump. Here a hump, there a hump, everywhere I'm Humpty Hump.
Shut up and just listen, not dissing, don't get me wrong. But to me it's just the same old song. So just watch, cause my name is Shock. I like to rock and you can't stop this. Tupac, go ahead and rock this.
Now I clown around when I hang around with the underground. Girls used to frown, say I'm down when I come around. Gas me, and when they pass me, they used to diss me, harass me, but now they ask me if they can kiss me. Get the fame, people change, wanna live their life high. Same song can't go wrong if I play the nice guy.
Claiming fame must have changed now that we became strong.
I remain still the
Why
same,
two?
Cause it's the same song.
Same old song, y'all. Yeah, Humpty Hump in the house, y'all. And you know what? It's the same old song.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain in a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. My name is Jeremy F., and I am joined by my ever-so-talented and lovely co-host, Pam Ray. Pam, how are you?
Well, you know, I am doing great. Life is good. Yeah, I'm always ready to pour the whiskey and delve into the deep end of poetry and hot tubs. So, you know, looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets. And how are you doing?
I am doing excellent. And speaking of cool poets, we have two doozies tonight. Again, I feel so lucky that we get to talk to these great poets on from All Poetry, because tonight we have Victoria Frost and Cannibal Utopia, both who I'm huge fans of. So I'm excited to go through their work with them.
Absolutely.
Are either of them on the line yet?
Yes, they are both here. Welcome, Victoria.
Ladies first, let's say hello to Victoria. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Glad to be here. Glad to hang out with you guys. Two of my favorite poets as well.
And Cannibal, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Thanks, Seth.
Cool. Well, let's not waste any time, because I have a lot of stuff to go over with you guys on this great set list you both provided for us. It's going to be ladies first, so Victoria, you are up. And with your first poem, we had a SoundCloud. So if you'd like Pam to cue the SoundCloud, we can do that, or you can read it in the raw. It's up to you.
Well, I don't know. Which one is it?
I'm posting it right now. It's Golden Remnants.
Okay, this one I will probably read. So,
okay.
Golden Remnants by Victoria Frost. I have watched you wither, attempting to polish the shine back into your appearance, massage the bloat from your belly. The dropsy is a bitch. Each day a caress that removes one more scale left to glitter on my thumb, a beautiful reminder that sands are falling faster than I can keep up. The white flesh of your sides exposed, pure, beautiful, and sickening. Contrasting the beauty of all that you were, lesions spreading across perfection, and no amount of glitter may replace what my tears have washed away, my deft fingers stumbling in panic to save a sinking fish. Scraping off the glittering gold of your magnificence, your eyes cast pleading glances to let you swim free, uncaring of what demise may come, chasing a slivered hope of survival rather than the crushing weight of my despair, the suffocation of my fearful grasp. I do not want to sit helpless at your pond, casting flakes of food upon the surface, distorting your image to my ever-watchful eye, mournfully, meticulously preparing you baths, an Epsom salt soak that burns your lungs, dehydrates your golden scales, leaving glitter in your wake, vigilantly collected and washed with my tears. Red, puffy eyes rubbed raw, push back the fatigue, attempting to avoid succumbing to the drowning need for sleep, where my nightmares drag me into the depths and snatch my hope, one fallen scale at a time. But I am human. I do not have cool waters to buoy my lids from the weight of exhaustion, hydrate my tearless eyes. And so I sink into a land of nightmares and wake in a world of destruction, where your flowing tails lay still, cloudy blue eyes stare blankly back, and your glitter no longer gleams gold. End poem.
I love that. I love the way you ended that. Cannibal, you get to go first. Start us off, buddy. What'd you think?
Well, I thought that, first of all, I'd say there was great musicality to this work. I thought there was nice imagery and a really interesting metaphor, you know, with her friend or the speaker's friend being like a fish and, you know, what's happening with losing her beauty, losing her scales. So it was pretty interesting. I get to stanza three, and I'm not sure what to do with my deft fingers stumbling in panic. Like, so the image that my mind immediately wants to go to is the speaker, or just this is actually you, Victoria, right? This is the author notes.
Yes.
Okay. So then I wonder, are you a nurse?
And so I'm not. I'm not, so I do appreciate it. I don't mean to interrupt. I come from a medical family. So my dad's a doctor, but I'm actually a licensed public accountant.
Okay. It's so, there's a few ways that I go with my deaf finger stumbling in panic. I mean, I like the imagery. Like it makes sense to me that you're facing the, you know, there's this empathy because of what your friend's going through, right? And so you want to help, but you're finding that it's difficult to do so. So I think that's, like, the imagery is a lot of fun. But I kept toggling, like, if you're not a nurse, then how are your fingers deft? Are you a lover then? So I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed the, like I said, I enjoyed the imagery. Let's see, I have here.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Pam, what do you got?
Well, you know, this one really touched my heart. It's beautifully written. And the thing with this is I appreciate that you put in your AN in honor of my friend, a beautiful, vibrant soul that cancer has not prevented her from sharing beautifully, even as it eats away at her. So, you know, we get that extra information that helps us to understand the poem. And yet, even if you had left that out, you know, we may not think cancer exactly, though that would be one of my first guesses. But, you know, you would see somebody who is trying to help someone, trying to help them keep it together. I like how raw and visceral the imagery is, with the white flesh of your side exposed, pure, beautiful, and sickening, contrasting the beauty of all that you were. I think it's so difficult to see a friend waste away, or a loved one, a friend waste away to something that where you miss the person they used to be. I think to me the most important part of this poem is, and it's beautiful all the way through, but I feel the most important part is, but I am human. I do not have cool waters to buoy my lids from the weight of exhaustion. And you really touch on the idea of a personality, a person who wants to do everything they can to help someone. And for me, I think this isn't, it really touches on the whole idea of a caretaker, whether you're taking care of a spouse or a friend or, you know, a elderly parent. When you're a caretaker, you have to admit your own humanity. You have to admit that you have your limits, and you also need to take time to rest and care for yourself. Now, when you write something like this, Victoria, do you either at the time or later think about, you know, how important a write can be to reach out to others who are in a similar situation?
That's a great question. So in truth, I don't. I, in full exposure, and I've talked about this before on other shows, but when I was a teen, I had a history of self-harming. And so in my healing to get away from the physical assault that I placed upon myself for emotions that just felt too big and too deep for me, I turned to music and poetry. And so for me, there isn't necessarily that reflection afterthought of how this is going to affect other people, though there's always that hope. For me, this was an full disclosure, so I'm going to remark on a couple things. I loved what Cannibal said about the deft fingers. She's not my lover. I unfortunately fly a very straight arrow. And so to me, the female anatomy is not appealing, but it's more the idea of feeling the helplessness to help someone. My family is fairly well known within the medical community, and my associations are fairly deep with prominent individuals in the medical community. And yet, even with all that power behind my name, I'm completely helpless. This poem was written on a day when the chemo stopped working for my friend. She's probably not going to be alive in the next 6 months. And this is someone who has metastatic breast cancer. And so she had breast cancer about 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. And it came back as lesions in her bones. And that felt really applicable when it comes to dropsy. Dropsy in fish is where they start to fill up with liquid, and it basically just kills them. It makes them sink. It makes it so they can't swim. It kills a fish. And so the cure for dropsy is to take a fish out of water and turn them upside down and massage their belly to force basically the stream of water out of their belly. Dad's a doctor, sister's a veterinarian, lots of science in my family. I'm the awkward accountant. And so for me, this poem came at a time when I had to start realizing that no matter what I did, I'm not going to be able to save her. Her diagnosis was immediately terminal. There's the last chemo that they used, which was 2 weeks ago, stopped working 1 week after. And so she's working her way towards hospice. So to go back to your question, Pam, I often don't think about after the fact or come back after the fact of how other people might be able to relate to this, because often my poems, especially things like this, relate to a deep emotional pain of mine. And it's my way of getting it out of my body so that I can try and process what's going on rather than drown within my feelings.
Very cool. I like that.
Wow, Vic. I mean, you're blowing me away by your first couple of responses. That's really, really bold of you to share to that extent. What I love about it, and I'm always a sucker for extended metaphor, I like the extra effort it takes to make it work. And I like how it makes – you have to bring everything back as – it's almost like you're writing two poems at once. So you carry this extended metaphor in a way that worked so well, but it kept – there's the harsh reality of the message that you're making. You soften it with, like I said, extended metaphor. Not only that, you took an aspect of the extended metaphor in the repeating glimmer and shimmer, the shiny part of the fish, that the prettier side, the part that catches your eye, and you touched on that. And I remember the first time I went through this, that little piece, the part of the extension, is what really caught my eye, and I thought that was really clever writing. And then the way that you do the ode almost at the end of everything that glitters is gold, that, I mean, that's what made me think when you said gleams gold at the end, almost an homage to the famous poem. So my question is, when you create something like this in your process in general, do you go in with a plan to pair with an extended metaphor like this? Are you that calculating, or is it more natural in how you come back to a topic as you go through the creation of the poem?
So the metaphor's kind of got a funny story behind it, the reason I chose this one. And it just happened, the face aligned on this one. So this was written originally for a contest put on by Bobby, Captain B2. In which it was the idea of all that – in fact, hold on, I'm at the computer, so I might as well just pull this up. So there's two sayings that she wanted people to ruminate on and kind of bring together. The first is that all that is gold does not glitter, and all that glitters is not gold. And I saw it on the day that I found out that my friend is turned for the worst. And I, at the same time, face aligning, used to watch TikToks, and on this TikTok there was a guy who takes care of fish because my husband wants to have a koi pond, and so goldfish and koi are in line with all each other. And so we've been watching this one where we got invested in this guy with his fish who actually had dropsy, and so it was literally months this guy was trying to treat his fish, and unfortunately it did not survive. But the fates kind of aligned in that. The idea, and metastatic breast cancer, so the type of doctor my dad is, a diagnostic radiologist, so I grew up around x-rays. But metastatic breast cancer, especially in bone lesions, is quite literally that holes within her bones that are growing. and they're taking away the beauty that is life. They take away the beauty of living. And things that I've watched is she went to Dubai to slice off a bucket list item. She wanted to go on safari, and that's not going to happen. That one was cut short by her now extended, she called it her hotel stay at the hospital. So in this one, the fates aligned. The idea of these scales immediately hit me because I'd been watching this goldfish deal with dropsy, and it so perfectly fit watching those scales be rubbed off, much like the way that the lesions grow within the bones. You don't know when a scale is going to come off. You don't know how many are going to come off, but it's just this slow degradation of the body. And so not all my poems are that calculated. Some of them are. I've got one where I reference John Keats' Ode to Melancholy, and I very intentionally use that as a thread throughout my poem because it's one of my favorite poems from John Keats. But this one, the fates just happened to align in just the right way to inspire this piece without me going in intentionally doing it. And so this is one of the poems that I wrote and then, you know, went back and just did some minor edits, but felt that it was what I needed at the time.
Wow. What a wonderful backstory. And what a great poem. What a great start to the night. Thank you so much for sharing. Your next one is up whenever you're ready.
I don't know. It might be a little too early for this one.
I'm going down the list, and now I realize that, you know what? It might not be the best sequence, but that's what we're doing.
I love it.
If you want me to post something else, I can.
No, this is great. This is one of my favorite pieces that I've written like this. It actually got Rex to not know what to say, so it has happy memories of me. Yeah, great memories. So this is, I'll try not to giggle now. This is called Oral Fixation. I've watched the water whip across your skin, spooring along the solar stream, achingly etched into your arm by hands more skilled than mine. I've wished to suck upon your spillway, lapping from the lines that lay along you, tracing your texture with the tip of my tongue, committing to memory the ache of your muscle. I've wanted to devour your desire, preying upon your pleasure, massage each moan with my lips, and know that you are mine. End poem.
Yeah, you know how hard it is for me to comment when you make me blush like this. You are up, Pam. You get to go first.
Who, me?
Yes, you. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, I see. Yeah, because both you guys just need a moment to think about this. No, I thought this was a wonderful sensual rite. You know, and to me, you very nicely balance out the idea that we all obviously know what's going on here, and yet there is so much illusion. You know, there is never anything said in a vulgar manner. And, you know, it's beautiful all the way through. And I like that this is about wanting to physically enjoy a lover, you know, the exchange of physical pleasure. But there's also the idea, what did you say in the last line, massage each moan with my lips and know that you are mine. You know, you want to know that someone fully and completely belongs to you, that they are nobody else's. And I think there's such a wonderful sense of intimacy within the seductive and tasty lines of this rite. Now, my question for this poem is one in general about sensual writing. And what I've noticed, and myself included, is that a lot of us have to grow in our sensual writing. Like we start out thinking that it has to be straightforward, it has to be almost nearly explicit. And then we start to kind of realize what, you know, how important it is to use allusion and metaphors in sensual writing to get our point across. Did you, have you, now I haven't read that far back in your poetry, and I probably won't, but did you ever have a time period where you realized that it was time to grow, you know, and as a sensual writer, or that you wrote a poem where you said, that's it, I've gone on to the next level of sensual writing?
Absolutely. I think we all should be striving to grow as poets, but I know that I began writing horrible, horrible stories. That definitely foreshadowed my profession about finances when I was 5 and 6. It's a stupid story. I've got it saved somewhere, but I've seen that progression throughout my poetry. And I remember as a teen, there was the fun of like the sensuality of like a vampire bite, because I grew up around that time. There was, you know, the fantasizing even prior to any actual experience of what would those acts be like. And I've noticed within my work, actually probably within the last 2 to 3 years, where I've started to try and focus more on the experience rather than the act. And so this, to me, obviously I have a like of something, as this poem reflects, speaks of the experience. For me, and how, while it's not for everybody, there is that intimacy and that passion and that connectivity that comes from it in more than just the physical way. And so absolutely, there's been the opportunity to grow and challenge myself to not focus so much on the obvious acts within that.
Very cool.
Great comments, Pam. And yeah, Vic, you're one of the best at this, because I can read it when you write it, because of the way, just like what Pam was saying, you put it in a way that there's enough innuendo to it that it's, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I can be comfortable with it and understand it and appreciate it for more than just the act, just like you were describing. And I even though it makes me blush, even though I have a hard time calling into your show sometimes, it's you do it in a masterful way, and I appreciate you, because there has to be not only comfort in your own sexuality, but you have to be comfort in expressing it, and then you have to be have comfort in people understanding what they're reading. So I mean, it's really a bold way of writing, and like I said, I think you're one of the best at it. What I liked about this one, and what we talked about even with another poet last week, it was the use of the word sporing in the second line. My vocabulary is awful. And I remember when I first read through this, I looked at it and I go, yes, that word is perfect, but I had to look it up. And then once I understood the definition, it even fit even better. And so I like when someone pays attention to the sound and the positioning of a word, intentional or not, it worked perfect for me. And that really what, early on in this poem, that's really what got me excited about it, on your language usage. Something you said in your comments to Pam is the experience is about you. And I think the underlying feel of this poem was the subtext was about being in control. I mean, was that your intention in this at all? Was the issue of control?
So, okay. So I don't know how much Cannibal knows about me, but I have my own radio show through LNP that we're working on getting back into, because my job has been psychotic. I've had a couple shows, but the main one is Black Lace Diaries, which looks at the not so vanilla side of intimacy. In the kink community, I'm what's called a switch. So oftentimes I like to be dominated, but there are those moments when I do like to do the dominating. And so absolutely, you read that right. This is one of those moments where I am taking control and I am taking my pleasure. It just happens to allow him to take some pleasure as well. So yeah, you caught on to that great, Jeremy.
Cool. Great poem. All right, Cannibal, you're up. What are your thoughts?
There's just one word I think that's necessary, and it's ravenous. I mean, it's I think what works really well for creating a rhythm for the topic is all the alliteration. I mean, it's so nice. It creates such a nice rhythm to the movement of the poem, which then obviously fits in. That was pretty fun. So there you go.
No, great comment. Great comment.
And if I might say, I actually genuinely appreciate that comment, because such as the second line in the second stanza, I very intentionally wanted that L motion of the tongue, because of what that sentence, what that line is portraying. So I am actually really appreciative of that comment, Cannibal. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad I could help somehow.
And, yeah, before we go on to the next one, I want to give you a quick opportunity to talk about, I mean, you do host shows. Vic, do you want to talk, give at least tell us what days they're on, so people can learn or talk with you about poetry more often in the future?
Yeah, so we historically, I had Hearts of LNP, which looks at just the poets in all poetry. There's, you know, I just decide a random theme and I go through the poets. People can submit poetry on topic. And it just, truth be told, I was talking to Pam earlier today and I was like, I don't know how tonight is going to go because I actually really suck at getting any kind of compliment on my work because I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, let's just move on. I love being able to highlight other people. I love being able to bring people into the spotlight who may be, you know, lurking in the shadows and have these masterful works that maybe they just don't enter into contests because contests aren't for everybody. And if you don't always get gold, this can be demoralizing. So we have Hearts of LNP, which historically has been the after midnight show for Sunday going into Monday. And then about once a month, we were doing Black Lace Diaries. So we're redetermining what that's going to look like in the future, just because, again, of some stuff going on in my personal life, which is why I've been away for the last 3-4 months. But we are working, Phil and I are working together to make a comeback on that. So Parts of LNP, just bring me what you want. Bring me what's best. And then we have the Black Lace Diaries, which, again, tends to focus more on the kink community because I truly believe everybody has a kink, whether they recognize it or not.
You're probably 100% right. Yes, I highly recommend that everyone tries to track down Victoria's shows. Look at the schedule on Late Night Poets. She is an amazing commenter on work, so please submit to her shows and listen in. She does a great job as a hostess. And with that, your next poem is up, Victoria.
All right, this is called The Quill. The nib of my quill is rusty. The nib of my quill is rusty, tines fused together from neglect, my breath suffocated with desiccated ink, preventing my words that once flowed freely. Each letter now a struggle against the dying impression, trying to pen this piece before dipping into the hollow reservoir to grasp the fading thoughts, ere I too am devoid of my muse. End poem.
And I tried so hard. When I first read the set list, of course I read the previous poem and then read this one, and I tried so hard not to assign metaphor to it. So I want to talk to it at face value because I think it's something that a lot of us deal with, is writer's block, having a hard time making the words flow. So my easy softball question to you on this one is, do you experience it and how do you work through it? Speaking of
so, writer's block. No, I love it. And that's exactly what it's about. Originally, I penned this as I was coming back to poetry a few years ago because I just lost my muse. I think this was written just after my youngest was born. Really, it's like a year after she was born. But this was me just trying to come back. It actually came, I was falling asleep at night. And as I was falling asleep, I have a large collection of quills and inks and nibs, and I just thought the first line, the nib of my quill is rusty, and it was like, and it just went from there. But I'm actually currently struggling with writer's block. Again, life is busy. I'm a tax accountant. I've just dealt with one of the worst tax seasons of my life. The position that I have within the firm has me making partner in 2 years. I'm doing massive presentations on tax-free wealth to hundreds of people 2 to 3 times a month. There's a lot of fun in my job, but it also doesn't give me the break to sit and let my muse dance. And so what I tend to do is basically what my last two poems were. I just went on and I wrote something. Even if it's not great and I don't sit there and think it's my greatest work, it just gets the ink kind of flowing. And like with a quill, sometimes those first few letters need to go back and be redrawn because the ink just didn't flow right. And so I love that it's a simple metaphor, but I love that you pointed to that because that's exactly the struggle it speaks about.
And yeah, sometimes you do. You just have to fight through it and put those words on the page, and then you can even surprise yourself with how it breaks through the wall. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Great comment. Cannibal, what do you think?
Yeah, writer's block or, you know, just having nothing to say, it's such a difficult place to be in. And I couldn't help but think there's this a Clutch song called The Yeti, and he's singing about like crazy random stuff, and then he gets to the third verse and he's talking about writer's block, and it's just, what do you do? Like, when there's just nothing there, there's nothing to mull over. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it expresses that quite well, like that frustration and the kind of almost hopelessness of, you know, being in that position. So
I really love that comment. And because I actually, I've got a babysitter who my firm just hired. She's never written a resume before. And so I had her come over yesterday and I was like, let's sit down and get your resume. And resume writing is an art of its own. And I didn't know how to really explain, how do I transition a Papa Murphy's job to equate an office receptionist? How do you show the customer skills acquired at that job to be applicable to an office environment? Because they seem like oil and water. They shouldn't go together, but they do. And that's the beauty of a resume. And so part of that struggle, and this is something that I picked up actually from my father, when I had to do my college essays, was that when you don't know what to do, you just start venting. And I remember yesterday just sitting there being like, I don't know how to write. How do I explain on a resume that she is seeking a position in which she can use her excellent customer service, you know, and it flows from there. So I love the example that you provided, Cannibal, because it's actually a writing technique when you are stuck with writer's block, is to just start venting, and eventually the actual words start flowing, in which case you just delete the first stuff and maybe fine-tune the front. And so I'm ranting, but I love that example because it so perfectly explains this whole process of sometimes breaking through that blockage. So thank you for that.
Great conversation, guys. Pam, what is your thoughts?
Well, I think you guys have pretty much said it all, so I'm just going to give a compliment and say I thought this was a beautifully written brevity on the topic of writer's block, you know, and I liked it all the way through, but especially that second stanza. I think reservoir is probably one of my favorite words in terms of sound. So very well done here, Victoria.
Thank you, Pam.
Great comments, guys. Your next one is ready for you when you are, Victoria.
All right. This is going to be Ode to Flower Dreams. Oh, to bask beneath the sun, unfurling leaves and petals to gather warmth and await the aria of a bumblebee in flight, whose tongue might tickle their pistils as she feasts upon their sweet nectar. Here, too, they dream as she rests, a pause upon their petals, her fuzzy legs gathering their amber pollen while she dances in the delight of her feast, leaving her own dusting upon their anthers. And with a buzz, the bee begins to sing once more, lighting off from the flower's face so they may bask, feeding upon the golden rays, swaying gently upon the breeze, dreaming of warm spring showers and honeybees. End poem.
Gosh. You really know how to end a poem. It always brings a smile to me. Cannibal, you get to comment first on this one.
Well, it's probably because my cheeks were still red from oral fixation, but I started out with this ongoing. Like, as thinking of the flowers, like Georgia O'Keeffe, you know. But I was able to get away from that pretty quickly. Like, okay, no, let's just take this as a, like, I'm sitting on a blanket, leaning back on a blanket, and just watching the clouds go by, and I hear a bee, and I'm like, what's that dude up to? And I'm just watching the bee, you know, gather pollen. And so it's kind of, it was an experience, like, it put me in that place. So that was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Campbell. I appreciate that.
And lighting off, I tried, is that correct? Off from the flower's face?
Truth be told, you're now making me second guess myself.
I don't know. I mean, like, around, I'm like, it sounds...
Hold on. I'm going to Google this. All I get is turn a light off. This is not helpful, Google.
Well, it was fun anyway. It was, watching that bee was fun. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Even if you're making me second guess myself, I love it.
Wonderful comment. Pam, what do you have to add?
You know, I thought this was an absolutely beautiful rite. I love where you took this picture, and I can definitely see within it a delicate sensuality. You know, so I liked Cannibal Utopia's observations on this. You know, to me, and I guess maybe it's because the picture that it was inspired by, maybe it's because, you know, where my mind goes when I think about nature, but I love how you brought references to music and dancing in here because of the fact that bumblebees communicate through dancing, and there is a certain kind of musical song-like quality to the buzzing sound that they make. I thought this was beautifully written. Here too they dream that she rests the paws upon their petals, her fuzzy legs gathering their amber pollen while she dances in the delight of her feast, leaving her own dusting upon their anthers. Wonderful use. Like, I really feel like you do a great job of combining, you know, science and art to express the beauty of the process of a bee going from flower to flower, knowing that, you know, their future generations will be created. So I thought this was just absolutely beautifully written, and I can't really think of a question to go with it. I guess I am curious. Did you, like, set out for this to have that kind of underlying tone of sensuality, or did it just happen that way? Because, you know, when you talk about, you know, petals and pollinating and all that stuff, sensuality just seems to pop into people's minds.
So I'm going to make you guys all feel like perverts, and I'm sorry for it, because this was a poem that was written not without anybody ever, not with the idea that anybody was ever going to understand the personal meaning to it, but this was actually written about my eldest. So a bit of backstory, my eldest child, her name is Aria. She was specifically named Aria because I was originally a music major before I ever went into business. And an aria is a melodic opera solo in the middle of a symphony. And she was named that because every time I would play music when I was pregnant with her, she would move in my tummy. And her middle name is Rose because roses are my favorite, and Beauty and the Beast and roses and Beauty and the Beast. So anyways, in this, her colors when she was a baby My family does animals, and they do colors. And so it was very early on determined that she was my honeybee, because I'm the queen bee, hearty, har, har, har. And her colors are purple and yellow. And so in this, this is actually an ode to my eldest, because she is always dancing and she's always musical. And so Await the Aria of a Bumblebee is actually speaking specifically to my daughter. And this whole poem, I don't write poetry for my youngest. She just doesn't inspire me that way. My love for her comes through in a different way. But my eldest, actually, I write quite a few poems about her. So this has inklings and references to my eldest child, who is named after a flower and named after music and is my little honeybee, who's always busy buzzing around and creating havoc and joy and beauty within my life, while encompassing the two colors that are personality, the sunshine that brightens my day and the beauty of purple that is just the chaos of it. So.
Oh, I like that. That is so sweet.
Thank you.
I love it too. I love that backstory because, yeah, my notes were, and we'd already talked about it, was to talk about innuendo and poetry, and I was going to kind of avoid that. So, yeah, thanks, Vic. Go ahead and color me pervert. Thank you for turning me around because, yeah, that's where my mind
You're welcome.
Was. I love the inspiration of this. And I think one comment that both my predecessors said, especially I wrote it down what Pam said, was the combination of science and art in this one. I mean, there is a lot of you, just from what you've told us tonight about your history, your personal life, in this, in that the science of it. Because to have words like pistil and anthers and make something so beautiful, it is not easy. It's not easy to make it work so well. And then after you read this, again, I commented immediately about how I love how you end poems. This lands on a flower at the end. I mean, it has that beautiful, soft touch. So again, that intricacy that you added, the science with the art of this, regardless what the metaphor is, it's fantastic, and it works oh so well. So yeah, no, and I love the backstory of this. What a great story.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Welcome. Let me find your other one here. I just hit the wrong button.
Jeremy, I'd like to let you know that Tink has joined us. So welcome to the show, Tink. Glad you could be here.
Hello. I wonder, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, you can. That's good. I'm just using my laptop mic, so that's cool. Can I just say something? I didn't hear the poem, and I'm really sad about that. I'm going to go and read it because it sounds so interesting. My son did the same thing when I was pregnant with him. He would move inside me, but definitely tap out the music, Mozart. When I went to a film and there was a lot of loud rock music, and he just rumbled around inside me and complained I had to leave.
Oh my goodness, I love that. I love that so much.
Well, I am so happy to have you join us, Tank. Everybody, Tank is calling us from the sweltering heat from across the pond, and we were concerned that she wasn't going to be able to make it through, so I'm glad the connection worked. So welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Vic, your next one is up whenever you're ready.
All right, this is 2020 stars. This year has been burned into my mind, the light left from a fading star, vibrant as a supernova, bursting in colors all its own against the black of space. Though it is but a flicker in the grand scheme of the heavens, that moment of neon green fading to deep cerulean remains within my mind, the awe of it captured forever to sit and ruminate upon. To remember the lessons learned, recenter my soul away from the ego society inflates, and instead be reminded that I am immaterial, that there is a bigger picture I am a part of, just as the light that I see flickering in the midnight sky. They are small, beautiful, and more than likely already gone. End poem.
Gosh, I love that poem. What a great read. Well done. Pam, can you lead us off on comments?
Yes. Yes, I thought this one was a well-deserved gold for the late-night poets New Year's Eve celebration going from 2020 to 2021, because within this film, my eyes had looked for a poetry that was saying goodbye to 2020 and not looking for the negative, not looking for COVID-19 rights, which I know, understandably so, was such an obsessive part of so many people's poetry. Just looking for the emotions of being gone. And I really felt like, Victoria, you did a wonderful job of that, a wonderful job of looking back at what the years offered up, what time in life offered up. I particularly like to remember the lessons learned, recenter my soul away from the ego society inflates, and instead to be reminded that I am immaterial. I think when we realize, I think there's a certain gift to learning humility and learning that there is so much out there in the world besides just ourselves, as you say, seeing the bigger picture. I don't know, I'm totally blanking out, but find yourself in after the year 2020 was over? Is this an accurate reflection of how your mindset had changed after going through the year 2020?
Oh, it absolutely is. 2020 came with, as we all know, a whole new approach to the world. There was suddenly relationships that I once thought extremely secure that didn't feel so safe anymore. And there were people making lifelong decisions over something that probably shouldn't have been the determining factor. And so for me, 2020 really was this year in which I stopped. I had the moment to pause. My tax season was extended. I was working from home. I was more around my kids than I had ever gotten to be, which was amazing. But it gave me that moment too of not being able to go over to friends' houses or go travel and visit family. And instead, I had those moments to kind of pause and reflect and ruminate on what I was seeing going on. And then at the same time, realizing that in the grand scheme of things, one individual, especially when we were watching some of those numbers, one individual is so incredibly small. And when you extrapolate that out into the universe, it's just kind of humbling.
Wow, amazing comments, Vic. Very cool. Tink, what do you think about this poem?
I liked it a lot. The one thing that I did pick up from that was the fact that we think, although we can't be sure, that the stars that we see are possibly no longer there. And that is, you mentioned the word humbling. I think that's almost destabilizing. And is it true? We'll never know. I think, and that's one thought in the poem that sort of makes it very special.
Thank you, Tink. I appreciate that.
I think it's a beautiful thought, Tink. Really cool comment. And on this, I kind of to extend on what Pam was talking about too, one thing they say in music is to never say the years, because it kind of time stamps it and keeps it in a spot, even though there's a thousand other reasons why it would or wouldn't stay in that certain genre. On this one, because it says 2020 stars, it's 2020. I know it's only been a couple years, but when you look back, does the meaning of this poem, has it changed for you at all? Because it is such a specific time period, and do you feel like it will in the future?
So for me, 2020 gave that pause that was necessary. I'm a person who I'm constantly challenging myself. I have hypervigilance, and so it's caused insomnia. I have traumatic insomnia. which is induced by hypervigilance. And so there's a lot of hours that I have at night to kind of stop and think. And so I've always been a thinker. While this one is timestamped for 2020, to me it delivers the more important message that we are not so great that we are that we need to make these big, extravagant decisions. There is an opportunity to stop and pause. There's an opportunity to understand that what is right for me may not be right for others, that I'm not the determining factor in anyone's life but my own, including my own children. And so while this is time-stamped to a degree with 2020, it ultimately speaks of that reminder that our lives tend to be fairly immaterial. The people who make the history books, I'm probably not going to be one of them. And so how do I live my life in a way that understands that negativity that I have the ability to put out is probably not going to benefit anybody, especially not myself. So for me, it's that call and that reminder to choose kindness, if anything.
I love that answer. I love that because, yeah, the message is reading deeper than the moment. That's incredible. I like that a lot. Cannibal, what are your thoughts?
I would just repeat and agree with that. The ending was real nice. It was like the pacing of it was nice, the timing of it was nice, and it leads you to ponder. So then I picture like looking up at the sky, and every one of those lights is some person that's dead. Like, and so while you can't fully understand who they were, because they've been dead for who knows how long at this point, their light is still there. That was a pretty fun part of the poem. I wondered if in the first stanza, this year has been burning to my mind. A light left from a fading star, vibrating as a supernova, bursting in colors all its own. I didn't know if I should read that as three separate events or if it was all the same event described in slightly different ways.
I really love that comment because I don't think I can actually answer that for you. I can tell you that the inspiration to this actually is something that I got to witness in 2005. I grew up in Washington. I live in Washington, and I went to this camp called Kaleidoscope the summer of 2005, and we are out in Puget Sound, and it is dark. If you've ever been to Puget Sound, when you get away from the city, it's fairly dark. And it was the first night of Kaleidoscope, and I was sitting on the bench talking to someone, and we were looking up through the evergreen trees and had this little, like, you know how when you look up through pine trees, there's always kind of that space up at the very top of the branches. It's not like other kinds of trees that just kind of expand across the image of the sky. But I was looking up, and it was just to my right, and I actually saw a star die. And it was, and that's actually what's described in the second stanza. It was this beautiful green that faded to blue and then disappeared. And it happened in less than 30 seconds. Literally, if you weren't looking, you wouldn't have seen it. And it is still one of the most beautiful things that I've ever witnessed to this day. And that has long been, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just this memory that just leaves me in awe. It's not of any importance. It's just this memory that leaves me in awe. And it felt like the perfect explanation for a year that seemed to be so impactful. But even though I have that memory that's completely worthless, other than cool thing that I lived through, no emotion assigned to it, just except awe, I guess that is. But we lived through a year that really burst. It drew our attention. It stopped our lives. But it was just a year. And so I don't have an answer. I don't know that I necessarily intended it to be three separate instances. I don't know that I intended it to be one. I do know that it stems from this moment of witnessing something that was so beautiful and so vibrant, but was so fleeting and ultimately did not impact how my life went. if that answers it.
Wow, Vic. Great comment again. We are just about out of time. Is there? Selfishly, I would like to play your second SoundCloud, Day of Dreams, because it shows another side to your talents. Is there something else you would rather feature as a send-off?
No, that's totally fine if that's what you want. I know I'm kind of long-winded, and I don't want to take away from Cannibal, so only if he's okay with it.
Cannibal, do you have a problem if we'd like to do one more, and then we'll switch over to you if that's okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And we have a SoundCloud for this one, Pam. Whenever you're ready.
All right. Is it Deep Dreams or Daydreams?
Daydreams? Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. Here we go.
Victoria, that's amazing. No, selfishly, I wanted everyone to be able to experience that and see another side to your talents. I think tonight you've been very bold with us. I think it shows through in your talents as a poetess and obviously as a lyricist as well. That was a beautiful, beautiful recitation, and I just want everyone to experience that. Quickly, I want everyone else to have a chance to comment on this one. Tank, what were your thoughts?
Oh, just so impressed. That's absolutely beautiful. The whole thing, your voice and the poem, lyrics, just absolutely stunning. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tink. I appreciate that.
And Cannibal, your thoughts?
It was ethereal.
Ethereal.
So it's a little tough, though, because my phone keeps cutting in and out, so.
Well, thank you, Cannibal.
And yeah, if you ever want to revisit it, you can click the link on her poem, Cannibal, and you can hear it without interruption on another time. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is absolutely stunning. I love the lyrical quality. I'm glad we got to showcase a little bit of your musical talent, which shines in this. And this is beautiful all the way through, but I especially like that stanza that says, stretch beyond the sad, simple life, soar above the mountainscape. You know, I just really appreciate the idea of somebody wanting to go beyond their ordinary life and fly into their dreams. beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Like I said, Victoria, you've been very gracious. Thank you again for sharing and being so open with us. I'm a big fan, and I look forward to reading more of your poetry in the future.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And with that, up next, the man, the myth, the legend, Cannibal Utopia, who has been with us for the first hour. We are ready to put you under the spotlight. Your first poem is up whenever you're ready.
So I had them all open, I think, in the correct order. I just have internet, so the pages are open. So I'm assuming that we're doing Better Show Your Chateau first.
Yeah. No, I can read them to you ahead of time and let you know which one we're doing. It's no problem.
Okay. I better show you my Chateau de Benoit. Now makes man in his future images, sometimes past due. Bangs those symbols, collapse and expanse, makes everything new. When standing outside of all that is, you can finally see the whole of his wan glory. Exploding stars and colors and position change from the previous epoch. New forms of life elongated and squashed and altogether altered from the life you previously understood. Cannot now understand. Sheep don't speak like man. And this is what you've discovered. Everything has changed. Jim, your former friend, loose from mountaintop, rolls and banks his way down to mountain foot. You wonder if he can see, having become a tumbling rock. Wonder if he likes this new form he's taken. If he can understand that it's new. Wonder about yourself. How is it you recognize this life as when you previously knew an alternate form? See him sitting motionless, a mass of compressed minerals, not man. Deja vu lets you know you've been here before. Rattles and bangs your brains, offer scarce understanding of all that has changed. There's only so far that things can be changed. Conservation of energy's restraint offers only atom pairs new. Some larger, smaller, when the monkey bangs into existence, reform relatives. Gives life from former stars recycled into things like man, beast, cloud. Never cares to see what it is he's created. Doesn't want to see how all created things have changed. The depressing state of man in this most recent iteration, this new, distinct, half-rotted form of stumbling life whose retarded head against the wall bangs. Now, even those with you swinging hammers and cacophonous bangs in effort to build your own world, to see how well you can do it, creation of life, of universe, from nothing, plan for all to be changed into the glory of your own form, yet somehow new. Return to what you know, the simplicity of your own shape, man. Too long, didn't read. Man, having seized the monkey god symbols, bangs new universe in the self-worshipping shape. Come see, changed by small degrees creation. Come celebrate life.
I love the TLDR. I didn't know what those were for. That's a neat little insight. Tank, would you like to start off comments on this one?
yes, I'd like to mention the TLDR. I mean, that really amused me. Is that a legal term? yeah, it's really interesting. It's full of kind of hard-hitting reality about kind of how nasty we are. I go along with that, sadly. And there's just lots of places where you mention that. I'm just scrolling down here. I was so intent on listening to you, I didn't even scribble down where I wanted to pick something out. So I'm mumbling a bit, but I can't find it. But I liked it a lot, so I think that's all I have to say.
That's fine.
That's a perfectly valid comment, Tank. Well said.
He read it very fast, so I'm going to go back and read it, though, because I just think it's great.
If you go to the Late Night Poets message board, I'm putting the links on there, so when he's reading them, you can click on the link and read along with, if that's helpful.
I'm trying to do that. I just, it was rather fast, yes, thank you.
Yeah, okay. Victoria, are you still with us?
I am.
Well, feel free to comment.
So I'm grinning like a fool, and I'm really glad you called on me, and I have a thought. What I found fascinating about this is Giotto di Bondone, that's not that pronunciation. They were an Italian artist, one of the first great artists. And if you've seen their work, they often involve the saints and have those religious symbols, which is really around that time. And so what really stands out to me in this is that it feels like this satire against the modern day Christianity, or the idea of what modern day Christianity is meant to be. You know, here we have these people who are called to be Christ-like, who are called to be kind, and yet really it's kind of more like a monkey with some symbols clanging away, not caring whose finger gets stuck between the two, who gets hurt for the fear of being spoken over, and so they bang a little louder. It's this calm, this understanding that sometimes we think that we're following something, whether it's actually an attestation to Christianity or just in general, like Tink was saying, how far man has fallen in being benevolent beings. We tend to lose our singular thought. We're now following blindly these masses that say what is right, what is wrong, regardless of what good they're doing, to the point where we see in that metaphor the idea that we've changed. We're no longer a man. We're just kind of falling down, bumping around, understanding that we're no greater, no smarter, no better than a rock that's falling down a cliff surface. And we don't even seem to have the ability to self-reflect long enough to figure out that something's changed. Even if we're not a solid rock, we're still acting like one. We're still doing one, uncaring of whose way we're going to get into, who we're going to squash. And so that kind of leads us down this reminder of how we are oblivious to what has changed, how we are oblivious to how we are behaving and the connections that we have with each other, until finally we have this idea of this perpetuation of social media where we think we're celebrating life, but are we really? Are we really looking at the good and the bad of life? Or are we only so focused on lauding ourselves as saints that we've forgotten what that even means? So with that in mind, I have to ask, was that kind of your intent, Cannibal, or what really prompted this?
So a couple of things. This is Sestina. And so I'll just explain Sestina. I don't know. Sestina, obviously, six stanzas of six lines, and then you have seventh stanza with three lines. And the end of every line has the same, every line in the first stanza, those words are repeated in every other stanza, but in a different order. And then you finish it I've got the same six words in the final stanza at the beginning and at the end of the final stanza. So Giotto was asked by the Pope, one of the Popes, to do a painting for the Pope to try to pick up this contract. And so Giotto just painted a perfect circle. And that's what he gave him. He was like, this proves my ability. And so this is kind of a jackass move, really. Like, I'm saying, look, I'm good at this shit when I say that, you know, when I do something. So that was the title and the idea. But the whole story is you take conservation of energy, reincarnation, deja vu. I said reincarnation and words are running away from me. But I took all those ideas and just put them together and tried to create one creation story out of all those ideas. So.
Well, very nicely done, truly. And you definitely showed us your skill here. Thank you for sharing that.
No, and that's exactly where I was going with it too, Victoria. And I love that you asked that question. Because, I mean, it was kind of a setup on where I was going to it, reading a lot of Cannibal stuff and knowing how he goes into religion on a lot of his work and his thoughts on it and goes at it from different angles. And I thought that was the impetus for choosing Giotto. I don't know. I had to look him up, to be honest with you. I didn't know the history, but I love that story about the perfect circle. And the fact that you took this and put it into that format and then did us the service of explaining the format, because that's beyond me as well. The fact that you created your perfect circle, you created a format, and then you stuck to it, and it's so well, it's not in your face. So many classic poetic forms are predictable and obvious. I didn't see it. I didn't see it at all. I mean, I saw it in your note, but I didn't see it in the work the first time I read it or even when you were reciting it tonight. So I think that makes it all the more magical. Great share on this poem. I enjoyed it a lot. I don't have much else to add unless you want to dive in a little bit more into the religious aspect of this, but I don't know if this is the poem that you want to entertain that conversation. It's up to you.
I mean, what's the evolution? That's the word I was looking for. That's running away from me. the idea to me that there is not a creator, a designer, is just a ridiculous idea. And so I was being a little bit of a dick, really, like laughing at the idea that there's not a creator, that we just happen to be. And so you take all these ideas of conservation of energy and reincarnation and deja vu and evolution, and they all do fit neatly together. They all work together. But the whole monkey thing, like if the monkey is featured over and over in a number of my poems, because I've got this whole storyline taking these four ideas, and if you step outside of everything that's created and you turn around and take a look back at all of creation, you're going to see this giant symbol-banging monkey, this giant toy. And whenever he crashes the symbols together, he's doing the big collapse. And when he expands the symbols, he's doing the big expanse. Like, this giant-ass monkey is our creator. So that's the whole idea. It's just all tongue-in-cheek. And, you know, I can be kind of a dick sometimes. So that's kind of part of it. So.
I don't think you're being a dick at all, man. Do your due. That's what I love about your poetry and what we're all going to see tonight that comes through with Cannibal. He does his own thing, and it's so fun to get into it with him. Your next one is up whenever you're ready, my friend. Proper grammar.
Proper grammar. Writing the flag walks have always bothered me. We have a fairly decent system in place for making accessible things that would otherwise be problematic for, say, those in wheelchairs. In an effort to allow access to people in this position, we've paved near everything and done so atop a hidden grid. Rough routes are trodden across grass to avoid following sharp corners by the majority of capable feet. Why, I've often wondered, isn't the obvious route considered prior to laying the concrete? At certain venues, I do follow the path as laid out by the builders. It is at these rare places that I tend to decide that I want to help to maintain the proper order of things as designed. Everywhere else, though, well, why am I going to get all worked up about staying on the marked path when the A to B says, go this way? Seems the difference between form and function. But the form's all backward, and so we create form through function by creating a more natural appearance to the paths we're walking.
Great poem. Great read. Victoria, you are up first.
I'm so glad that I get to go first. So I love that this is called Proper Grammar. And then the only stanza that actually is proper grammar is the one in the middle, which is talking about actually following the path. I think that's really, really fantastically done. Throughout the rest, you have periods without a followed capitalization. You paused for commas that were non-existent. But that's the beauty of poetry. It does not always have to be proper. Sometimes that pause is just the end of a line. Sometimes it comes with a comma. Sometimes we just ignore semicolons. But then there are those times when you have like your sestina that you did in the last one where you're following those rules. You're following, you know, what are supposed to happen. But it shows the freedom and the beauty and the breath. And while some people get caught up in that your grammar is wrong, there are some poems that just need that freedom. So I thought this was really, really clever. I thought that this was almost comedic, almost like a satire on the grammar Nazis. But I think this is marvelous. Just, it tickles me pink. So with that in mind, do you find that you like to be more on the proper grammar side? Do you have a preference when it comes to that? Because I also notice in the author's note, it says, for my new AP friend, I ain't mad at ya. So what inspired this?
So Why Rocks? I have a poem, Why Rocks? And I think it's a beautiful poem. But the poem, I get to the end of the poem and the proper sentence, I can't pull it up right now because my computer's being weird. But it ends and I say something along the lines, do these stones whisper so quiet we can't hear it? Now the proper sentence is, do they whisper so quietly? And so there was this argument that I had used improper grammar. And I tried to, I made the case that by using proper grammar in this case and saying quietly, I'm adding another syllable to this word and I'm destroying the fact of the word. Like, it is no longer a quiet word because it lingers for too long. And, you know, in this discussion with this person, the only thing that he could understand was proper grammar. So I was like, all right, I don't know. I know this is a good poem, so here's something for you. And then I just smashed this thing out. So I was a little bit pissed off when I wrote this. But
I love it. Well, you did say sometimes you can be a dick, and so now I have to tease you. It's kind of like lighting off, right?
Yeah, you know, like, yeah, I don't know.
But no, I love it, and I actually love that this was inspired by something so much as the feel of the word, which is completely valid. You know, there is sometimes when the feel is more important than the actual grammar, even though it could even still be grammatically correct. So I really love that. Thanks for sharing that story with us.
Yes, and I agree with Victoria. I was dying for the backstory on this one. And I love that it came true. And all the smart little plays. I mean, I think you hide, you pack so much in the present that is your poetry, that there's little nuances every time. And so that's why I'm so excited to go through it under a magnifying glass on all these, to get all of these backstories. And will remind me in the future to pay extra close attention to every move that you're making, because they're all deliberate. And that's the magic of really cool poetry, I think, when you find other little nuggets, other little Easter eggs throughout a poem, where in this one, I mean, look at all the emotion that we've talked about you carried in this. You said that there was an argument. You said you were being tongue-in-cheek. And then there's all the effort to make all of this, the intelligent moves as well. I mean, it's packed on emotion outside of the message that you're even trying to convey. And so I love that you have, and I think you and I have talked about this in the messages before, about the onion, the layers, the heavy, different motives that are going on throughout your writes. And it's always a fun ride, buddy. This one is great, and I love that Vic pulled that story out of you. That's what I was looking for. King, do you have comments for us?
Oh, yes, I do. I'm a big one on shattering grammar. I think poetry is for doing what the hell you like with language. I mean, if you can't do it in poetry, where can you? I mean, it's not prose. There's no, as far as I'm concerned, rules of grammar in poetry. And I really have a big argument with quite a few people on AP about this. I mean, a running battle. And I just love this. I like the way you paste the problem of urban architecture onto your discussion about grammar in poetry. And that stanza at certain venues, I follow the path laid out. I love that. And I love the art out and about. And there always was a thing. There used to be notices around a grassed area, say, do not walk on the grass. And people always did, because it was a direct route.
Right.
And I see cracking grammar often as being the direct route to actually what you want to say. And I'm not very keen on using prepositions in poetry. And that drives people around the twist. So to me, it's like walking across the grass when there's a do not walk on the grass sign. So I just love this, and your whole conceit of mashing the two things together. Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful comment, Tank. And I want to read, I don't know that we can all see the boards, and I want to read, Daniel keeps writing some incredible comments to your poetry, Cannibal, and so I want to read this so it's part of the show. He writes, this poem, proper grammar is really interesting. It's funny. I was just thinking about this topic the other day. We have these concrete paths that we've made in the world, and we drive them and walk them. And when we need to put on our shoes so we don't hurt our feet because it's so hard. But right next to it is the grass we paved over, and it's soft and inviting. Yeah, we walk around it, but we don't walk on the grass signs on it. We have paved our little paths that control our destiny.
Very interesting. LOL. Nice job. Great comment, Daniel. For the next poem I have for you, Cannibal, is What Did I Know? And I'll post that right now.
What did I know? All the ovens are open? That's great, because I've got the sausage and SFW. That last bit was too late if you happen to be at work, and this whole bit is gross if you happen to be unperverted. The red squiggles tell me that's not a word. We on the same page? I never started a story at the start, because that's a long time ago, and really, I don't know where that is. In the beginning? Read there a biblical riddle. That's just taking shape in this physical plane. Consider, for example, chubby-cheeked Lois Schickelgruber cooing at his mother's breast and his eventual offspring. Who could have guessed what little Adolf was to become? His grandparents probably had high hopes for him, which perhaps he met. Jeez, I didn't expect this to get so dark. So are they the start of that story? No. They had their own, who had their own, who had their own, etc. until Adam. Then etc. there stops, unless you want to count the big guy. Which should, because no equation makes sense without him. Anyway, I'm off base as always. What was I saying? Ah, yes. A one-man hot dog poking contest. Facts aren't super important. Might even get me in trouble if I were to expose them. But the point is, if any at least semi-warm space is suitable for cooking your goods, well, you might need some mental help. And I don't mind kicking in to get you straightened out.
See where my smiles come from in his poetry, and that's what I when I originally read this. Or oh my gosh, it's a fun ride, buddy. And what you do, what I really like in this is I'm hanging on tight, right? I'm holding on to the bumpers. You're going 50 miles an hour down the road, and you're telling me, you're catching me as I'm catching bits, as I get into the groove of where your mind is going on this. You catch me like in the very beginning. I've got the sausage, not safe for work. And then you said, you catch me for being perverted for the thoughts and where you led me. And then you catch me again when things got dark in the poem. And so I like the fact that there were these little checks in it that kind of had me going, damn it. Not only am I trying to get in his mind, but now he's back in my mind, figuring out what I'm already going to be. My reactions are always going to be to his words. So I like that. I like that in this one, the fact that you are already predicting the audience's response, and you're kind of poking at them for that. So that was my takeaway for this one. I really enjoyed the ride.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Tink, what do you have to say about it?
I can only be impressed by a poem that goes from sausages to Hitler to God and makes you smile. So just great.
Fair enough. And Victoria, what are your thoughts?
I want to read this one a couple more times because there is a lot that is packed into this. There's the joke of the sexual innuendo, and I really like that you kind of have that internet speak going on, you know, NSFW, not safe for work, TLDR, too long didn't read. You're getting those internet acronyms that we probably didn't even know about 10 years ago. Well, arguably, we did know about them 10 years ago, but my point stands. They haven't been part of the vocabulary, the English vocabulary for hundreds of years, and yet they're so beautifully worded into this that your poetry almost reminds me of Deadpool. And I mean that with the highest compliments possible, because you've stopped and made us think all while talking about sexual innuendos. You've got us wondering, where does the story of Hitler begin? Does it begin with Aloysius, his dad? Does it begin with the grandparents? When do you start associating blame? Does it go all the way back to the big guy? Do we blame Cain and Adam? You know, where do we have this? The point is that, you know, if someone could go back and prevent Aloysius from doing the deed with Adolf's mom, that doesn't necessarily mean that things wouldn't have happened the way that they would. It ultimately, good, bad life happens as it is. And sometimes it's not so much about creating the next great person. Sometimes it's just about finding a warm spot to park it. And so there's humor, there's comedy, there's a facetiousness in it, but at the same time, it's really philosophical. To me, it plays with this idea of where does good begin? Where does bad begin? Where do we assign blame? Where don't we? Is it the big scheme of things? Is it the fall of man, or is it something else? So I do want to ask, how did you get into a writing style like this that almost plays at breaking the fourth wall? What kind of drove your writing to be this almost direct, jovial, and yet philosophically based write? How did you get here?
I couldn't even tell you that. I just sit down and do what I like to do. That is really, that's the beginning and the end of that whole conversation. Like, I just don't give a fuck. Like, if I have a picture in mind and the picture has a certain shape to it, and I'm just going to draw the picture of the words, that's just really all there is to it. And I'll just follow, you know, I'm just coloring by numbers, you know, like whatever it is, that's what I'm going after. And I don't care if it's ridiculous. I don't care if it doesn't, I think that I'm good at what I do, and this is what I'm going to do. So that's really that whole deal. So.
Yeah. And you absolutely are good at what you do. And so I've got a follow-up question. I'm sorry I'm taking away from the other commenters, but do you find that when you're not writing poetry, your mind kind of does this sporadic follow the numbers wherever it may lead, or is this specifically a thought process that comes to your writing?
Oh, I'm definitely a dreamer. Yeah. Like, my head is always in the clouds. So.
Love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Oh, no,
finish that thought. I wanted to hear the rest of it.
I was just, my marriage counselor described my wife as a kite string and me as a kite. Like, I would just disappear. You know, the wind would just take me wherever the hell it took me, and that would be the end of David. So.
And there is that, buddy,
and
there is that to your work, buddy. But I think that's why I'm also so drawn to it. And Vic really touched on it. It's not just that you're free balling and going nuts with words. There is a craft with all of it, and there is a deliberateness to everything. And once I can,
absolutely.
I mean, I go through it every time you post something. I'm going through it five or six times because the first ride, I'm letting my hair blow in the breeze. But then I'm trying to pick up all the little morsels that you're putting in here. So I think there's more to it than – it's not just stream of consciousness, crazy words. There's a craft to it. And you showed that to us in the first poem as well, like that you held into that form of, you know, the stylistic form that was already existing. So it's not just craziness. It's controlled madness. It's poignant. It's poignant genius. No, I really enjoy your work. And before we move on, do you have anything you can plug? Do you have any books or other places besides All Poetry where we can find your work?
No. I can tell you that I'm 45,000 words into a love story that takes place during the zombie apocalypse. And it's been painful. So I'm going to get it
perfect.
Done, though. But no.
And then once you get – are you going to get that published professionally? Are you looking at self-publishing, or do you have an avenue yet for that?
I am probably going to go professional. Like, I'm gonna run with it until somebody picks it up, because there's some good work there. So,
right on, man. Well, keep us posted. Let us know when you get it complete, so we can, if anything, offer you moral support before you're behind the bright lights and big city of formal publishing. That's really cool. And then my last question before we move on. Before we move on to your next one, can you tell us about your moniker a little bit? Why Cannibal Utopia? What's the significance of the name?
Significance? I don't know. It's zombie paradise. I don't know. Like, zombies are stupid, but I love them. So they're just like, you know, like, it's I just like the whole idea around it. And you know, you can look at the name Cannibal Utopia and it can take you a lot of different directions, really. I mean, it could be religious, it could be irreligious, it could be whatever. It's just fun. And it's my gamer tag on Xbox, so.
Perfect. Perfect. That works. Well, whenever you're ready, your next one is up. Like Him.
Like Him. We join and become two constellations, all of creation alone, boundless horizons, unwavering light. Religion is born of this act too. Final Approach offers four beats for a song you can't quite remember, so you make up your own tune. This will fade soon. Time will die soon. I will fly free soon.
Great read. Tank, you are up.
Okay. This is so different in texture and the fact that it's short. And you slowed down your voice as well when you were reading it. So I knew that's where I should be when I'm reading it as well. I can, as the first thing when I read to the bottom of this, you say, I will fly free soon. And I immediately thought of your comment about the marriage counselor and the balloon thing. So I see this as a very personal write about yourself. I wonder if that's the case.
Sure. How much do you want me to tell you right now?
Hey, it's your time, buddy. Go in as deep as you want to go. It's up to you.
So I was hanging out with my wife, and we're mm-hmm. climbing that mountain, and I saw the formation of a star, right? Like I saw a star being birthed. And like, we don't have kids and we're not going to have kids, but so I saw this and I was trying to grab a hold. This whole poem is trying to grab a hold of like the act of sex is such a beautiful, like wonderful thing. It's just an incomprehensible thing. And especially, you know, that because I love my wife, like we've been married 20 years and I enjoy being around her, you know, like clothes on or clothes off, you know? So, I was just trying to grab a hold of what this was that I experienced. And so I saw the two of us, you know, as constellations in the night sky. And so we were bigger than ourselves. And it was, this is like trying to describe a dream is what's happening with this poem. It's just how you wrap your mind around what just happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful explanation. And Vic, what are your thoughts?
So first, I'd like to say that I really appreciate you sharing that because that's I read this as intimacy. I read this initially as the union, as the act of intimacy, and even as the thought of where does what happens when the time comes to a close, be it because of death or because of just departing. But even as you were talking about kind of that star that has burst and as you were talking about how you were climbing that mountain with your wife, you actually reminded me of it was another poem that I had submitted. And I had used specifically that phrase, the star has burst, because it was actually talking about a miscarriage that I had in January of 2021. And so I appreciate this poem all the more because how do you put into words the dream, be it a future with someone, be it a child, you know, be it that 25th wedding anniversary that you're trying to plan for, and then see it maybe not come to fruition. How do you explain that dream and the loss of it if not the star bursting? So not necessarily that's what you intended by that phrase, but I thought this is really magnificent. It feels extremely intimate. You feel the passion almost, especially with that third stanza, religion is born of this act too. Final Approach offers four beats for a song you can't quite remember, so you make up your own tune, kind of the losing of the rhythm for that moment of euphoria, but then it's so jarring, that post-nut clarity almost, the reality of it. Even having been previously divorced myself, having this future planned and then the loss of it or even the thought of the loss of it, it's jarring. It's not what you anticipated. And so for me, this feels very vulnerable in its context. And so I don't really have a question, but I want to thank you for sharing this. It's beautiful, it's intimate, it's hard, but it's real.
Thank you.
Excellent comment, Victoria. I really like that. And what I like about what Tink said is I really picked up on the fact that she commented about the texture of it, because that went over my head. I wouldn't have felt that. And she also pointed out on your reading pace and how you presented this poem, and then understanding the intimacy behind it and how much you just shared with us. I enjoyed it the first time I read it, and it just took me to a whole different place. Because for me, I wasn't keying in on the intimacy, to be honest with you, when I was seeing it. I knew it was something that was cherished, but then I remember the first time it was more about the loss by the way that you ended this poem. But now that it's been described to me, it's not it. That's not what it's about. So, wow, great conversation, man, and I'm glad that you presented this one to us tonight. It's a beautiful poem.
Thank you.
And I came into this thinking that I was going to drill you with 1,000 questions, and all I'm doing is complimenting the heck out of everything that you put on here. Oops, that's not the right one. Let me copy this. I did the same one.
Are we doing Howard next?
Yeah, I believe so. Let me see if it's coming up. Yep, Howard's with us whenever you're ready.
Howard. Come on, man. Now you're intentionally trying to confuse people. David John Vandenberg. Man, I wish I was one of those ducky birds I see in my front yard now and again. I could run around quacking. Fuck, 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 fuck. And everyone would still think I'm cute. How does this happen nearly every time I sit down, which is all the time right now, which my pecs and biceps were sore as my poor ass, to write? These little dudes waddle stiff-legged in the most hilarious fashion, and this is the picture I wanted to offer. But instead I've given you what? Fuck? Can't you do any better than that, David? I'm trying, for fuck's sake. Jeez, man, calm down. Let's start again. Man, I wish I was one of those hilarious ducky bird guys that hang out in my yard. The way they waddle when walking is awesome. But then I'd be a bird. And for what? So I'd have a cute walk? That's silly. It is pretty darn cute. Wish they showed up at night. I'd go take a gander. Wait, wait, wait. Ducky bird does not mean duck with a funny name. It's an actual bird. I don't know what kind, but it's a bird, not a duck. It just has a duck-like face. One more time. Man, I wish I was. Problem is, I no longer want to be that bird. It throws its whole body left, right, left, as it walks across my yard. I'm pretty sure it doesn't have any knees. And I'm not convinced that the definition of walking includes whatever it is that bird is doing. Fun to watch? Yes, absolutely. Fun to do? Jury's still up. Man, I'd like to talk to one of those ducky birds that hang out in my front yard at times. They've got to have a great sense of humor, considering how hilarious their walk is. I suppose they could just as well be a bunch of Bonapartes. Man, I don't know if I cared so much about birds.
Great read. Great read. You're up, Victoria.
So I really love this because we have that kind of repetition, this man, I wish, with those ducky birds. But there's also that understanding or that play of the idea of first, you know, we look at something and it's, what would it be like to do this? And as we start thinking about it, we understand that there's really not an appeal. And you show that. There's kind of this thought process through the whole thing as you're like, man, what would it be like to be a duck? Maybe it's not really what I want. And then we also understand that ducks are kind of assholes. And so now it's the question of, are they funny or are they just these Napoleon Bonapartes who have a complex and are not really going to be all that pleasant, even though they're really fun to watch. And so I really loved this because it just kind of, it plays with that idea of how we talk ourselves out of things, these experiences, as much as we sometimes wonder about them. So with that in mind, were you actually watching a duck? Like, what inspired this poem? And I hate to keep asking that question, but your poetry is just so unique and thought-provoking and in all the right ways. So what was this? How did this come to your mind?
It was. There's just a bunch of birds hanging out in the front yard, and they made me think of little ducks. Like, they're kind of iridescent feathers, and their faces kind of duck-like, and but they clearly were not ducks. So my wife and I were making a joke that they're ducky birds. That was it.
I love it. Sometimes the simplest things bring about the greatest works, and this is just hits all the right buttons.
No, I think you're right. I think sometimes it is the simple little observations that sometimes can evolve into something much more greater than what their even inspiration was, what their, where the muse came from. And on this one, and I know you've already told us, you've told us that you're very self-confident in what you do. It shines through in your work, and you don't really give a fuck. You're just going to do you. But in this one particularly, it felt to me, because maybe it's just the restarts in it, are you ever hampered, or is it ever in your mind the reaction or the thoughts of your audience throughout the creative process? Or do you put it out there and then maybe do some edits? I mean, the simple question is, are you ever hampered by your audience?
Not hampered. I think it's a big part of what drives my writing, really, is I picture what be, and then I like playing with that idea. It's just a writing to me. Like, I like people, around people, but I am at my house all day, like, you know, looking at my house, so I don't see people. So it's kind of like meeting pretend people.
It's cool, buddy. You can have imaginary friends. I'm down with that answer. Very cool. Tank, what are your thoughts?
I just love the humor in this. But I think that there's a thread of serious and rather sadness in it as well. I'm a great person for saying fuck. I probably say it about 20 times a day, so that really amused me. I mean, see, some people don't really like it coming out of a lady, and still I get told off for it, so I was delighted by your fourth line there. And the way you said it too, you actually sounded like a duck. You're going to have to teach me how to do that. I like the way that it goes down and you keep repeating. And it's almost like you're saying, fuck it, I'm not even going to edit this out. You know, you just put it, to me, it feels like you put it straight down there. I don't know if that's how you actually happen. And I like the your humor. That's where I went with this, but I also think it's a little bit angry. I don't know if you felt that there's a little bit of anger in here. I think all the funniest things hide other emotions, and I felt with this it was a little bit of anger.
So I don't know what happened with the connection. I think I heard enough to be able to answer your question. Like, it sounds like you read some buried anger or frustration in this. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that I generally enjoy finding things to be angry about. I don't know. I just like being pissed off, I guess. So, but this was our dog had not died too long before this, and so we put out some bird feeders to just watch birds, and it was right at the beginning of the pandemic. And you know, I just said earlier I love people, I love being around people, I love meeting people, and suddenly I'm just at home, you know. And so yeah, I spent a lot of time suddenly at home doing jigsaw puzzles and staring at birds, so I was a little bit pissed off.
Well, if your call dropped, Cannonball, then you missed the part where Tink begged you to teach her how to fuck, say the word fuck like a duck. She was really impressed with that part.
It's one of my favorite words. I use it every day.
It's definitely underutilized. So you drop your F-bombs as much as you want around this group. That's no problem. I think we're still doing okay. So your next one up is Tributary.
All right. Tributary. Saw a hawk this morning swooping down from power lines toward our feeder, snug under the tree outside our dining room, screaming, hi, the whole way. But those feeding birds didn't believe him and scattered quickly at the sight and sound. That cat's crazy, thinking he's making friends with us. I saw him grab Bob just the other day. Held him in those claws and gave a look around like he's the boss of this here domain. And now he's trying, hello? He's got to be out of his damn mind. Causing me to wonder if being a hawk is an lonely existence. They're supposed to be able to carry a lot of weight. when my choppy was sick, he thinned out to a fraction of his former self. And I'd swear to that hawk that if he ever made an attempt on my beloved dog, I'd do my worst to him. He never did. The sun hits our windows in the early part of the day and causes a reflection so that a viewer on the exterior sees nothing inside. We get hummingbirds within arm's reach, finches and lovebirds feeding nearby. A Gila woodpecker shows occasionally to steal some syrup, and I'll stand nose to window watching it tongue up those sweets. The hawks are regular in our downtown neighborhood. We're in an historic district in Phoenix where there's some tall trees for birds to perch, lush as a desert downtown hood can be. That dude swooped down once and grabbed a finch. 80-teen, cute little finch captured in its claws, but that hawk was beautiful, colored checkerboard wind-pushed into herringbone or houndstooth and crowned in blue. So I just did a quick search and discovered how wrong I often am. I'm pretty sure that hawk is an American kestrel, which is a falcon, which is entirely too small to have carried away my dog, and looks little as I remember. Looked frighteningly large, perched up on the power poles when my chop-o-matic was sick. I rent a room in our house to travelers. We've locked up doors and soundproof to offer privacy for both sides. I've only got one simple rule. Lock the gate behind you. Chopper was a curious dog. He'd leave the gate open, he'd want to go exploring, and some knucklehead did just that. I was messing around at my computer when a neighbor knocked at my door. Before she'd said a thing, I noticed my little guy standing happily behind her. Apparently, she'd seen him milling about on the corner. We'd already been told about his cancer, and we're letting him sleep on her bed. I was ready to tear some faces off. It's been long enough that I shouldn't want to offer him a strawberry that's too soft for me to enjoy while watching some silly show with my wife last night.
Wow. Great poem, man. Wow, great poem. I like how it shifts gear there at the end. Wow. What a great read. What a great read. So my question to you on these, obviously your imagination is amazing. And again, I can't wait to see some of your prose. I know that you've alluded to me in the past that you're working on it. But I think a lot of your prose and a lot of your observing what's going on in the world around you, like you said, you like to go outside, you see people, you enjoy people. And then you create upon that, expand upon that with your imagination. If or when you're having a hard time with a muse, do you have a go-to? I mean, I guess I'm asking that because we just had two poems in a row that have fowls in them. There's a lot of bird-centric stuff. So is it as simple as just looking out the window and saying, this is where I'm going to let my mind go? Or do you have a go-to, I guess, for any kind of inspiration?
I don't have a go-to. Like, I have no interest in poetry being a job. So I want my story to be a job. Like, you know, it's a lot of work, whatever. But poetry, I just want it to be free. Like, whatever it is that day. And so there was a time, you know, like the pandemic first started, and I had a lot of time at the house. I'd smash out a lot of poetry. I was like, all right, I'm going to do a poem every day. And a couple, you know, a few times I did two poems a day or whatever. But, you know, I got to get this story. I got to get this novel written. And also I'm just like, if something strikes me, I'm going to write it. But otherwise, like, whatever. So. And besides that, like, I've got a poem talking about how much I like Micah Patton and how he's a maniac. Like, he's got all these different projects. You know, he was the singer for Faith No More, and then he's Tomahawk and whatever the hell. He's, like, all kinds of stuff, Mr. Bungle. And he just gets bored. Like, he's like, all right, I've done that, and I've done it well, and next. And so I've, it's a very long answer to a short question. I don't have a go-to. I want to do something different. I always want to do something different, and so I'm starting to thin out on work. I don't know.
No, but that's what I'm looking for. I mean, that's the kind of answer that I was kind of hoping for, because I think you said it. I mean, you do this to be free and to be that artistic expression, and that's the piece that I really pick up on that I love about reading your work, is you are unbridled in all of this. And I think, and you'll see my series of questions of, I keep them trying to poke you to see if there's some other reason, but no, you're not. You're letting it go, and that's the beauty, because you're letting it go
recklessness, but also intelligent recklessness. There's purpose behind it, and I feel it, and that's why I'm a fan. So great answer. Tank, your thoughts?
Yes, go, following on from what you've just said about the feeling of the construction of your poetry, it feels as though you start with a thought, but you know where you're going, and even if you don't know where you're going, you trust yourself. You have an integrity about your own ideas, and they do seem fully formed, even though you seem to go off at a tangent. So they're sort of nuggets from beginning to end that hang together, even though what you're saying is very disparate. And the title of this poem, Tributary, when I saw that, I thought it was going to be about a river or some sort of trickling thing, but your poems are trickling things. They do trickle past many, many things. And so I like that word a lot. I think the tributes to your dog, and I just love the word, chocomatic. It's wonderful. and I love the way that we're starting off in your yard again, like the duck. And we're thinking about birds and raptors, and I have raptors around my house, buzzards. And I think in America, buzzards are vultures. And I like that you've got the word wrong, you've got the bird wrong. And so that does happen. I just like the whole thing of this. And then I realize that your last triplet, it's just so sad. And it's an extraordinary way of finishing off this. We're actually talking about your dog all along, really. That's what you were thinking, looking out in your yard. And I just love that. It's just great. I mean, this is the first time I've read it. I must say, I apologize. I didn't come to the site and read all the poems before. So I'm really talking off the top of my head here after hearing your first reading and quickly going down here. And you read at such a pace, which is great, absolutely great. But it's faster than I can read sometimes, because when I'm reading a poem, I often stop at a line and think, what was that? And then go back and read it, even during my first reading of a poem. But you read so fast that I can't do that. That's also very interesting as a presentation of a poem. So, yeah, that's great. And you've got some lovely lines in here, and I can't remember. I just mentioned again, Chocomatic. It's brilliant. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's okay, Tank. Pre-reading is not a prerequisite for joining the show. And a lot of times I think when people give their off-the-cuff gut reactions, those are the most honest and most true. So thank you so much for your comments.
I've been to Phoenix. I spent one day in Phoenix, so thank you.
Victoria, what do you got for us?
So, Tink, you stole my thunder with just about everything I was going to comment on, but that's great. It lets me kind of think through my thoughts a little bit more. But like Tink was saying, the title Tributary is so apt. The tributary in our current text is usually like a river or a stream flowing into something bigger, something greater, a larger river or a lake. But historically, this was also a person that paid tribute to a ruler, for example. You think of like the Ottoman Empire and stuff. And that both of those are appropriate for this poem, because this is like a little stream. It is something that flows into something so much bigger, and yet it also plays tribute to that greater thing. And it's that reminder that grief comes when we least expect it. We seem to think that as we get further away from the event that caused grief, that in some way it gets easier, it gets lesser, that it's not impacting our life as much, and yet it takes that one thought to bring it all right back. And so I really appreciate that it kind of starts with this almost humorous thought. It feels very much like, and Jeremy mentioned this, like you're standing at your window, you're looking out, you see a hawk, and maybe we're going to have another Howard poem going on here. Maybe we're going to have a story about the hawk and the finches that are feeding there and the jokes of, oh, he's trying to say hi, huh? We know that's not what's really going on. But really, it then very quickly flows into, I remember when that bird seemed really big and I was worried it was going to carry my dog off. I remember the fear of this dog being, my dog being taken away, Choppy, being taken away from me, and how I protected him, not just from the hawk, but from the people that came into my house, from the people that all they had to do was shut the gate, and this one guy didn't. He did not shut the gate, and if something had happened to Choppy, even though something didn't, still ready to the ends of the earth for him, ready to tear some faces off, like you said. And there's so much power and emotion and passion and all of that, and yet at the end, we are still left with that heart drop, that moment of realizing that that hawk reminded us of all of this, and yet we're still in the habit of offering him a strawberry. He's just not there to take it. It gave me goosebumps. I didn't know where it was going. It was that winding creek that rolled into a river, that rolled into this massive lake that reminds me of my own griefs that I've had to work through, that still bother me to this day. Even though some of them are years old, decades old, and yet they still hit just as hard. There's still those habits that hit just as hard that we have to pull ourselves back from, and there's still those moments that unexpectedly draw up such deep pains that remind us that, in a way, those wounds never really heal. So just again, I'm in awe of this. It reads each little section almost like their own poems, and yet it flows so beautifully and perfectly together to really bring us to that moment where it just gives us that pause. And it's not an ending that we walk away from easily, which is very reflective of the grief that we don't walk away from easily. And yet it still plays that beautiful tribute to a creature that may have spent a small amount of time in your life comparatively, but left the biggest lake to still swim through. So thank you for sharing this. This is marvelous.
Thank you.
Wow. Wonderful comment, Vic. And guys, we are out of time, so I want to thank our headliners tonight, Victoria Frost, Cannonball Utopia. Thank you for calling in, obviously, to my co-host Pam Ray and to Tink. Please join us next week, which our headliners will be Tink and Babbler. Thank you guys very much. Enjoy your poetry. I wish we had more time because it was great conversation tonight. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.